Hello, Ben.
My name's Jeremy Wells, and this is Matt Heath.
Hello, Jeremy, and this is our podcast, The Best Bits from Today's Show. And at the end of it, you go, well, I won't be listening to that show in its entirety if those are the best bits, because pretty low level. Pretty low level.
Whoever you are, wherever you are, across this beautiful nation, you are a great New Zealander. And this is the Punishing Matt and Jerry Show on the best radio station in the world, Radio Hauraki.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Matt and Jerry Show, the formal Tuesday edition. It is the 26th of September, 2017. My name's Matt Heath, and this is my friend, Jeremy Wells.
G'day, Matt. G'day, everyone. Fantastic. Interesting things going on in the world at the moment. North Korea releasing a video of their amazing CGI powers as they blow up a bunch of military stuff. Of course, David Seymour mentioned us on Radio New Zealand yesterday as being the best election coverage of any radio station in New Zealand. And then there's this really weird haka that I saw yesterday with Joseph Parker and Tyson Fury.
Yeah. Is Manu Vatavai there as well?
Yes, he is.
So this is after the fight in Manchester, but it's not Huey Fury.
No.
It's Tyson Fury.
Yes.
And it's not the Tyson Fury that you've seen in the past.
No.
It's sort of a really massively fat, out of shape Tyson Fury.
It's like some weird imposter. Some guy in a fat suit.
And he's not really doing a haka. He's more just sort of punching.
He's shadow boxing.
Yeah.
He's shadow boxing his way through the haka. It's very unusual. The whole thing is unusual. Why he's even there is unusual. Manu Vatavai, you were saying to me before, is he's now got a contract over there. He's playing in Manchester, is that right?
Well, he's playing on the north of England.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure where.
But Tyson Fury went over and wanted to have a beer with Joseph Parker and the Duco White Walker. And the Duco White Walker's in there as well. It's just a very weird situation. There's something weird about it.
Well, they've got a massive head of steam up, and always this is a rule that they need to teach young kids. Think once, think twice, think no drunken haka.
Mm.
And if you are going drunken haka, no cameras, no phones. Everyone has to check their phone, because the drunken haka never looks good. It never looks good the next day.
As far as I'm aware, no one's Māori in there. That's what's so strange about it.
That is interesting, isn't it? Well, hang on a minute. Isn't Tyson Fury, isn't he?
Tyson Fury.
Oh, yeah, pretty Tyson Fury. Yeah, he's from the Māori gypsies of Europe.
Something really weird about that. The whole thing was weird.
Well, the whole thing is weird as well, because it was such a piss-weak fight as well, you know? And then it's not even Huey. It's Tyson.
No.
It's all very strange.
Duco White Walker.
I don't see the Duco White Walker in there. What's he doing?
The Duco White Walker's hanging out after the bout. He looks shattered, actually. He's still recovering from that big night out.
I think he put more into that trip over to England than anyone else. I think he put more time in. He did more hours than anyone else, anyway. You'd have to say.
Kevin Barry with that rug. It's a weird situation.
The whole thing, the optics are terrible. Agenda.
Come on.
Later, does music make beer better? Soon, tracking your partner can actually be useful, but now rate your house.
Girl, I'm gonna make you sweat.
It's so weird, that song.
Sweat till you can't sweat no more.
And if you cry,
I'm gonna push it some more.
What does that song mean?
Yeah, I know what it means. You know what it means.
Well,
you know what it means.
What? Making love out of nothing.
No, that's different.
Oh. Okay.
Pounding away.
No, that's. I need to write a song about that.
Have you ever lived in a cold, damp, loud flat? Now you can warn others. A new rate and review website lets users search the conditions of prospective flats before they sign their lease. New Zealand Flat Reviews allows tenants to rate warmth, dampness, noise, location, and how quickly landlords respond to maintenance requests. Website founder Aaron Yee hopes the platform will offer a sense of fairness for potential renters.
I just heard Aaron Yee on Rachel Smalley's show this morning. He really sucked the life out of his interview. I'm not sure if he even knows what his website does. because she came and asked him about his website, and he was like, kind of.
So websites like this generally require everybody to be kind of contributing to them, otherwise they don't work.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you move into a flat and you look it up and nobody's written anything about it, and or maybe there's one review.
Well, it's like the restaurant ones where you go there and the restaurant across the road has just written a series of really abusive reviews.
I do not trust any of those restaurant things like Yelp or whatever they are.
Don't trust those. They're ridiculous. They're vindictive.
Insane. And the other thing is that like 99% of people go along to a restaurant and they have a good time, or they, you know, they're having an okay time, or they have the time that they expected to have before they left.
Yeah.
Or they have the time that they expect relative to the price it cost. But the people who write, like, give you one star, you know, yeah, there's people that give you one star. It's like, if to get one star, in my opinion, if you go to a restaurant and you come away with one out of five.
Yeah.
I mean, someone has to have abused you. They've got to be hearing the food.
But there's just whingers out there and complainers, and they're the type of people that that register themselves on those things. I mean, that's the thing. If you go and have I have wonderful meals all the time, but I never go and review them online because why would I bother?
Mm.
It's that one person that, A, has a really bad time out of pure bad luck to the restaurant, or is just that kind of person. So these things are not free of vindictiveness. And they're not free of just whinging, whining pieces of crap.
There's lots of fives, and there's lots of fours, and there's often lots of ones.
Yeah, yeah.
There's hardly any twos and threes, have you noticed that?
Absolutely. Hey, Jerry.
Yeah.
I was wondering if I could do something just a little bit out of the ordinary here on the show. I know that we often shoehorn in
vaguely related personal stories.
But up next, I'd like to shoehorn in a vaguely related personal top five.
This is a regular.
A regular. So, this is...
Five stories.
Well, no, five things. Like, it's a top five. I want to list the top five worst flats I've lived in.
Can you not just crowbar it down, shoehorn it down into one? Render it down?
No, I'm going to need five. I'm going to need to shoehorn in top five vaguely related worst flats I've lived in.
Just render it down to one?
No, I'm going to need five, Jerry. I'm going to need five. I'll keep it brief. Okay, brief, don't worry about that.
I'll rate your top five out of five.
And now, it's another Matt and Jerry top five.
In light of a new website, New Zealand Flat Reviews, I'd like to shoehorn a vaguely rated personal top five into the show and rate my worst flats I've lived in over the years. Yeah. Right.
So you passed me a piece of paper.
Yeah, I have, absolutely, yep.
And it's got five addresses on it.
Yeah, it has.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to read out these addresses?
Yeah, and I'd just like to say that I've got no idea what state these houses are in now, because they were generally pretty good before we moved in, and after repairs they're pretty good afterwards, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get into this then. Here we go.
Number five.
The number five worst flat you've lived in was 14 Titan Street, Dunedin.
Yes, that's where we invented the game Smash Bottles, which was a game where you just, if anyone yelled Smash Bottles, everyone had to run to the yard and smash all the bottles in the house against this big freeze block wall. It filled the yard with glass. One morning we smashed a hole in Andy's wall and pulled him down the stairs when he wouldn't get up to come and play cricket. Ben fell through a shed roof, was jumping on it, and had to be rushed to hospital. Also, there were possums living in the next door neighbour's roof that were sort of...
Oh, making love.
Making love and those horrible noises.
Such tender lovers, aren't they?
Number four.
31 Ariki Street, Greylin, Auckland.
Yeah, I lived in a shed there, so small. I had to sleep in the fetal position with my feet touching the TV screen that I had in my room. There were junky needles everywhere when I first moved in, and a family of stray cats under the floorboards that were sort of squeaking all the time. It was pretty hard to sleep in that shed out the back of 31 Ariki Street.
All right.
Number three.
The number three worst flat you've ever lived in, 5 Heriot Road, Dunedin.
That's right. The windows were smashed out by Stapp and Grubby in the first week, so there was a lot of cold air coming in. Then the front door was removed at a party during the second week, and then there was a hole smashed in Spooge's bedroom floor in an attempt to run sort of a trap, you know, like an old school trap. There was a rug and there was a hole smashed in his floor, so he'd fall down the hole. Unfortunately, cats would keep coming up through that hole when you're playing video games. Also, Andy's cat ate Stapp's magic mushrooms and went mental and caused all kinds of messes in the lounge.
Number two.
The number two worst flat, Matt Heath, you've ever lived in. 60F Surrey Creers, Auckland.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure about this. I tried to look this up exactly where it was because I think the building's been rebuilt. It was sort of a warehouse, but it was about where 60F is now. Quite different arrangement now because these places have been done up. But back then it was a massive freezing warehouse, no walls on my room at all. Flatmates hated me due to them being smackheads and me being a bit of a drunk. Had a mezzanine level in my room. And I fell off once when I was sleepwalking and cracked open my skull. Flatmate had this really horrible stinky dog that would bark and growl when you got home.
Number one.
The number one worst flat that you've lived in, Matt. Nine Vogel Street, Dunedin.
Yeah, that was an old bank. So I lived in a bank vault in this abandoned old bank. And the vault had no windows at all. It was where they must have kept the money. So it was all metal walls, so it was freezing cold, and you couldn't shut the door for fear of suffocation. Eventually we didn't pay our rent at all, so we got locked out by the landlord and had to start entering by climbing through a hole in the ceiling. At one point some homeless dudes moved in downstairs and stole my guitar. Flatmate had this punishing one-eyed cat called Coke, who wasn't house trained.
Okay, so those are Matt Heath's top five worst flats he's ever lived in. You know what? I want to come back to this.
Yeah.
Because there's a couple of notes that I've written down here while you were reading that out.
Yeah.
And there's some issues that I've got around this, but we'll come back to it after the news headlines at 6:30.
Mike Hosking is a high-level achiever. Jeremy Wells is a low-level bottom feeder. So he's been asked to be more... like Mike.
G'day there. Election over, business as usual. Who are the winners and losers? Well, there were lots of winners. Bill English, for one. He won despite not having the sex appeal of John Key. Jacinda Ardern was a winner. She got her fence painted. The Greens were winners. They didn't completely implode and managed to sneak a super hot young MP into Parliament named Chloe someone. The Maori Party were losers, as was the Maori King, who backed the Maori Party. And any other Maori was a loser who backed anyone other than a winner. And then we get to Winston, who was a winner despite being a loser and losing his seat in 93% of the vote. But the biggest winner of the night for me was the Duke of Marlborough in Russell, where Winston is holed up dressed like Al Capone, holding media court in a double-breasted pinstripe suit. Great publicity and a great place to dine. I'm a big fan of the showcase of the pickled candy stripped beets and beet gel, yellow beet crisps, candied walnuts, coupled with a bottle of 2005 Dom Perignon to start. Then I move on to the gluten-free organic lamb leg steak with roasted Dargaville Kumara, minted peas, salsa, onion crisps, rocket leaves, mustard mayo, dried vine tomato, and I'd wash it down with a Darenberg Shiraz. I'll finish with a sticky, perhaps the Pascal Pasito. So where to now? It's been a delicious start to the new electoral term. Let's hope Winston doesn't sully our electoral aperitif over the next few weeks with an unwanted post-dinner cigarette at the negotiating table. We'll see you tomorrow.
And that was the Hosking Rant.
Hey, so it's all about who Winston hates, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's all about who Winston hates in the negotiation. Looks like Paula Bennett's not there because he blames Winston blames Paula Bennett for the pension leak.
Yeah, well, yesterday Paddy Gower on News Hub said, Joyce gone. Joyce, he hates them. They hate each other. They absolutely hate each other. They really hate each other. So Joyce, gone. I just love the way that he was doing it.
Well, every single person that had anything to do with that whole pension leak or accused pension leak is not allowed to negotiate with Winston. Wayne Eggleston, gone. Yeah,
gone.
Clark Hennessy, gone.
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 Who?
Clark gone. Hennessy.
Gone.
Nationals campaign communication director Clark Hennessy, gone.
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 Gone. And who are the Labor Party going to bring in? Well, they're going to bring in Annette King. Everybody loves her. Apparently David Parker is on the negotiating team. And there's talk of bringing in Sir Michael Cullen as well, who got on very, very well with Winston back in the day.
Well, whoever turns up, they'll be wanting to turn up with a pack of Dunny Blues and a couple of shot glasses and some decent expensive single malt. Nothing too budget.
Dunny Blue.
The Agenda.
Which agenda are we doing?
Agenda 2.
Agenda 2.
Agenda 2.
Oh, really? Yeah. Someone needed to tell me that. I need to know what agenda we're doing in advance.
Agenda 2.
Agenda 2? Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't want to do Agenda 2.
You don't want to do Agenda 2?
No, I guess we can do Agenda 2.
You got to do Agenda 2.
You got to tell me if we're doing Agenda 2 in advance. You can't just spring Agenda 2 on
What's
me.
The difference between Agenda 2 and 3?
I'm just pretty focused on Agenda 3. Later, tracking your partner can be useful. Soon rate your flat, but now does music make beer better?
New Zealand's beers could soon be alive with the sound of music. In fact, Auckland and Otago universities have just been awarded $1 million through this year's Endeavour Fund to research how sound waves impact beer fermentation. During the study, speakers will be submerged in beer to play sounds and music to the yeast. The process will then be monitored to find out if it will make the beer ferment faster or impart better flavours and aromas. I mean, these two things that are dear to your heart, Matt. Music and yeast.
And $1 million of taxpayer money.
Mm-hmm.
That's my three favourite things. Beer, music and $1 million of taxpayers' money. I can see some people such as, those lower tax campaigners having a problem with $1 million beer and music.
Mm-hmm.
Can you see that?
I can,
mm-hmm.
But with the amount that is given out over the years, we're talking about a lot, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. I'm saying just give $1 million here and there. Why not give $1 million to breweries and music?
Tell you what, I've probably pumped quite a lot of music through beers in my time, not intentionally. But I've definitely had a beer in my hand when there's been some music going through it.
Mm-hmm.
So give me $1 million. But how does this work, Jerry? How does the music affect the beer? How does it make the yeast ping? Should we talk to someone that knows about this?
Matt Heath, Jeremy Wells, The Hodaki Breakfast.
Auckland and Otago universities have just been awarded $1 million of taxpayer money through this year's Endeavour Fund to research how sound waves impact beer fermentation. The study will put speakers submerged in beer to play sounds and music to the yeast. And now the Garage Project breweries have been doing this for a while. And on the phone we have Pete. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, good, thanks. So what does it actually do when you blast music through beer?
Well, we got onto the idea. I think there's several winemakers who are convinced that playing music to their yeast when it's working in the barrels, fermenting their wine, produces a better wine. So we thought we'd give it a hoon with our beers. And we were lucky enough to track down somebody with a quite amazing underwater speaker from Auckland Uni, and that's Andrew. We submerged the speaker in the beer and played it music. First time round, we played it classical music for 2 weeks, that seems very conventional. And then next time round, we wanted to have a hoon at something else, so we submerged the speaker into our 666th brew and played it nothing but heavy, dark doom and death metal for 7 days. Yeah.
And what did that do? Did it turn the yeast evil?
Well, it's interesting. I did it mostly because I thought it was pretty funny and it made me laugh. But what we did discover with the first brew, which was a surprise, is that the beer actually fermented 10% more than that yeast would normally do. So you normally have a range. Your yeast will normally ferment something, up to sort of 70%. This fermented 10% more than the maximum you would expect that yeast to do. So it seemed, obviously it's just one attempt, but it did seem that it stimulated the yeast in some way.
But I guess it could ferment more. Could it be any noise? Like, would it have to be music? Could it just be?
Well, that's the thing. I suspect
could it just be Shortland Street playing on a TV speaker.
Jesus. I don't know about that. I suspect there's some element of it being vibration.
Yeah.
But then, maybe not. Maybe it has to be exactly the right kind of vibration.
So you started with music like this.
Exactly.
This is Beethoven's Sixth Symphony.
Yep.
F major.
For me, that doesn't excite me about a beer that's had that played through it.
No. It's very sophisticated, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was quite gentle. It was soothing to hear that. Because the thing for us was it was kind of echoing out of the tank. So you'd have this kind of just quietly going on in the background. It was very soothing.
Oh, it's a lovely piece. But you know what I mean? For me, as you're saying before, it doesn't really scream guzzling beer. You know what I mean?
No. It's sipping music, isn't it?
Well, yeah,
sipping.
I mean, they're probably in Beethoven's day, there would have been a lot of people guzzling a lot of beer.
There's probably more beer drinking in Beethoven's day than there is now.
Yeah, there would have been.
It probably was.
Sticking stuck into the mead as well, I'd say, in those days.
That's right. Beer for breakfast back then, I think.
Yeah.
It was safer than water, so yeah.
So, Pete from the Garage Project, do you play it all the time, 24 hours a day?
So with these two beers that we did, yes, we submerged the speaker in the beer and we just played it nonstop. So the first time round with the classical music, we tried to kind of match what the yeast was doing. So we played it romantic music when it was growing, and then we kind of played it frantic music during the ferment, and then we played it really calm, soothing music when it was conditioning. Then with Dark Resonance, we've got a mate called Jimmy. Who's into his heavy metal.
Jimmy.
He's covered in tattoos of demons with erect penises, which is pretty legit.
Heard about Jimmy.
So he made us a playlist that was 7 days of non-stop doom metal with no repeats, and chronologically ordered, which is that's pretty legit of him. We played that to it nonstop.
Yeah. I also understand that you played a bit of 80s punk, the Dead Kennedys as well.
Oh, these are other tunes. Oh, yeah, there we go.
What a great tune.
So that's another... Those are all tunes that have inspired other beers at the Garage Project. So we've got a beer called California Ruberalis.
Yeah.
That's one of my faves. Mm. It's good.
And we've got to wait for the chorus. Great songs. You also experimented with some New Zealand music. The Phoenix Foundation, "Give Up Your Dreams." What a great song!
It is cool.
That does the subject matter of the song affect the outcome? Does when you play them the Dead Kennedys, is it anti-Nazi punks, and if you play them the Phoenix Foundation, "Give Up Your Dreams," does it suck the
a little bit shoegazy?
Yes, sucks the takes away your ambition to succeed. And I understand you came in with a bit of LCD Sound System as well, North American Scum.
Yep.
It's got some bass in it.
Yep.
Well, I thought this was interesting. Your choice of the Dude's Bliss. A beer about drinking beer.
Yeah. What a classic. I challenge you not to whistle this for the rest of the day.
Well, that's a great song.
It is.
Well, what did you find when you played the Yeast Bliss by the Dudes?
Well, we haven't actually done that one yet. We're in the process of it at the moment, so I'll tell you.
Will the yeast drink the beer that it's in?
Little Dave Dobbin yeast.
The beer just ends up growing a massive ginger afro and huge pair of aviator sunglasses.
Pesting around the pub circuit in some tight pants.
And some really tight pants.
Really tight. Dangerously tight. Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you so much for talking to us today. Good luck with
your
continuing of playing music to beer from within the beer.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. Nice to chat.
Nice to chat, Pete, from the Garage Project Breweries. This is the middle of the Matt and Jerry podcast,
It's not the middle.
Well, close enough to the middle.
Yeah, but it's not the actual middle.
Okay. You are a certain ways through the Matt and Jerry podcast. There's still some great stuff to come, so... listen to the end. And
the rest of it's not very good either.
Okay. All right.
So waste of time. It's a little bit here.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll just shut up then, shall I? Jesus Christ.
TV, TV, and more TV.
You know nothing, John Snow.
It's Joe Jury on what you need to feed your eyes. Thanks to Sky, the home of premium drama.
Joe Jury, welcome to the show. I bet you spend a lot of time watching TV on Saturday after the 27-hour marathon that was No Sleep Till Election Day.
I couldn't do anything else. All I could do was watch Narcos Season 1.
Mm,
had to go back to the start.
I'm surprised you watched Narcos.
Mm. I needed something light.
I bet.
Yeah.
Bet you did.
Yes, real life mayhem and murder to make you feel good about yourself after a big night out when you're looking the demon in the eyes. Now, wow, what are you talking about today?
Firstly, I'd say that I heard you earlier talking to Steve Simpson about Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
This is the TV segment. It doesn't go into Steve's segment.
Oh, sorry.
This is the TV segment.
Yeah, but I bend thought the that
knee.
Too, actually.
But the bend
yeah.
the knee
yeah,
situation.
No.
Keep it in here.
Yeah, but he was talking about NFL players bending the knee.
Yeah, but now you're bringing sports into the TV segment.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. All right.
This week we're talking about a TV show on Viceland called What Would Diplo Do?
Now, well, hang on a minute. Does that mean you're bringing DJs and music into the TV section?
Well, this is a music station, so I'm combining all facets of life.
All right, okay.
So it's a show called What Would Diplo Do? Do you know who James Vanderbeek is?
From Dawson's Creek.
Yes, I don't want to wait for this life to be over.
I don't want to wait for this life to be over.
Spent his whole life trying to hook up with Katie Holmes, and he never did.
And then Cruise just snuck in there.
And how did that relationship go?
Quite well, actually, like all Tom Cruise's relationships. Isn't she with Jamie Foxx now?
Yeah, that's a weird one, isn't it? Like, because Tom Cruise, he was his mate. It was Jamie Foxx and him were mates.
They were buddies.
And he swooped in and he's gone home with Holmes.
I quite like that, the safety video at the moment with her and Cuba Gooding Jr. That's good.
So What Would Diplo Do is a show basically about Diplo. Do you know Diplo, the DJ?
No, you're talking about Thomas Pence.
I am talking about the Thomas Pence.
The internationally renowned DJ and producer Diplo, who can bring 60,000 people to their feet, but that doesn't make him good at life.
No, he's he's got other struggles in his world. So this show it's kind of like an entourage for electronic dance music that dances. It's a fictional version of Diplo's life. He's an executive producer on the show, and he's got James Vanderbeek playing this kind of hyper version of himself who gets into all these stupid situations.
Okay, hold on. So Diplo, it's about Diplo.
Yep.
But it's not, with Diplo is not in it.
No, he's got Dawson playing Diplo.
That's weird.
Yeah. Does Dawson look like Diplo?
He's got a bit of a Diplo Dawson vibe.
Because, you know, if you're going to cast yourself as someone, I mean, that's quite... Because, I mean, you got to say Diplo's quite a good-looking guy, whereas Dawson's quite a sort of a creepy guy.
I would have gone 90s Dawson over 2017 Dawson.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a really weird look to him. Very weird look to him. But it also stars the guy that played Lloyd on Entourage, who was Ari Gold's assistant. The gay Asian dude who was very funny. He's very funny in this as well. Its first episode was on last night on Viceland, Channel 13.
And turtle?
No turtle so far.
No turtle.
No turtle and no Johnny Drama.
Disappointing.
No doubt they'll bring them in.
Mm. Hey, it's very well rated. I'm looking here that it's 95% of people that have watched the show have enjoyed it.
I only bring the good stuff to this segment, as you guys also know. And we're also giving away some $500 worth of tech.
Some tech?
Yeah. Last month we gave it away to Detective Sergeant Dick Butterfield. And this month we're giving it away to a man who's on the line right now.
Ben from Crossroads.
G'day, mate.
Good morning, Ben. G'day, mate.
How we doing?
Good, thank you.
Good, thanks, Ben.
What would we like to
hear? You've won yourself that tech.
$500 worth of tech.
That's $500 worth of tech for you, Ben.
Shit, yeah.
Tech. What? What did you say, Ben? Jesus,
Ben. I mean, yeah, of course.
Jesus, Ben.
Sorry, boys.
So thanks to Sky TV, what are you going to spend that $500? What $500 worth of tech are you going to get?
Oh, that's a tricky one.
Do you think you might try and get a wire up?
A what?
Nothing. It's a pointless joke that we've been running for a while. Doesn't matter. Yeah, $500 worth of tech. I mean, you could get so much tech for $500.
Whereabouts in Christchurch do you live, Ben? There's a running debate in the studio about Christchurch at the moment.
Oh, yeah. I live out Hallswell.
No. Hallswell, okay.
Have you ever lived on Peterborough Street?
No.
That's a pesty street.
What about Barbados?
No.
I've lived in Hornby before.
Hornby. Oh. Rakaia.
Have you ever been to the Horny?
The Horny?
The Horncastle Arena?
Yeah.
Did you spend any time in Spraydon?
Oh, I have, actually.
Bit of thyme and spray.
I know some fellas that live over that way.
Dirty old spray.
Bit of thyme and spray tonight.
Hey, congratulations, Ben.
Awesome. Cheers, guys.
Pleasure, Ben.
And make sure you check out this Diplo.
What would Diplo do?
What would Diplo do?
Thanks, Joe.
Now, there's been a lot of talk about the That's Incredible segment on the show, maybe too much talk, but I guess I need to clarify what the situation is going forward with That's Incredible. I can't just cut it. I've been told by Grotland that I can't just cut this segment. But what I am going to do, Jerry, is I'm going to restructure the segment, and I'm going to performance manage you, and then maybe I'm not sure how it's going to go, but you might have to reapply for your job as the That's Incredible story finder and deliverer.
I know how this works.
Yeah.
Well, I know how this works. I know what you're up to.
Nothing's been decided.
I know what you're up to.
Nothing's been decided.
I know what you can't. You can't stop the segment. You can't fire me. So what you're going to try and do is you'll make the segment redundant. You'll make me redundant. You'll restructure.
No.
And then you'll performance manage me out of That's Incredible. I know what you're going to do.
No. What I'm going to do, Jerry, I'm just making one small change that it's now not just one caller decides on 0800 Hodak if your story is incredible or not. It's the best of five calls.
Yeah, exactly. So you make it.
Well, do you back
make
yourself,
my position untenable.
Do you back yourself to bring an incredible story that's going to get five callers, Jerry? I mean, that's the question. I mean, are you up to the task? Because if you are, then let's continue. If you're not, we can shut it down right now.
You're just making it hard. You're making this segment. You're just making me battle away with the segment. Okay, I'll give it a go. Five callers. The best of five callers. Four mountain climbers in the UK had to be rescued after achieving the wrong kind of high. The group got stuck at the top of Scaffold Pike in Cumbria after smoking the Fakamanas and becoming incapable of walking. Yeah. UK media reported. Scaffold Pike is the tallest mountain in England at 978 metres. Jeez. It's roughly equivalent to Waikato's Mount Te Aroha and Mount Porongia in height. Their predicament sparked a three-hour rescue involving helicopters, ambulances and mountain rescue staff. Words fail us, Cumbria Police posted on Facebook.
Okay, there you go. So some people got stoned and went up a not very high mountain. That's embarrassing for England that's their tallest mountain. Anyway, it's best of five callers.
Look at that. Boom, five callers, and we'll go straight to Victoria from Whangaparo. Good morning, Victoria.
Good morning, boy.
Welcome to the show. Incredible story or not? Caller number one.
I think it's pretty incredible.
Boom, Victoria. She's on my side. Good morning, Patrick.
Are you dropping calls?
Good morning,
boys. Patrick with the massive downstairs.
I mean, part of the incredibleness of this story is that England's tallest mountain is 978 metres, not even 1,000 metres.
I didn't think England had peaks that high.
Well, it's not that high. 978, Mount Porongia.
I've had a few girls climb over a peak about that height.
Get out of there, Patrick. You know about the tent that you create in the mornings. Is that an incredible story or not, Patrick?
Nah, it's not really that incredible.
Okay, that's not great. Well,
when you consider that Mount Cook is like 3,800 metres.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, that's three times. It's nearly four times as tall as their highest peak.
Yeah, that's a humiliating mountain.
That's a bit embarrassing for... Geez, you're actually getting quite a few calls.
Exactly. Joe from Glenbrook, good morning.
Good morning. Of course, it's incredible. Matt Heath, I want you shut down,
exactly,
mate.
Exactly, Joe.
Keep your hands off this thing.
Joe's a big supporter.
Hey, Joe from Glenbrook, get your hands off the stings. He just set off the shut it down's name. I don't know if he's allowed to do that, is he?
he's totally allowed to do that. Here's Johnny Scroat. Good morning, Johnny Scroat.
G'day, mate.
Johnny Scroat, incredible or not?
Well, Stoner story's always funny, mate. That was incredible.
There we go, bomb. All right. See, you made it difficult for me, but the people came through. People love That's Incredible.
It's easy to do it once, Jerry, but keeping it up over a period of time is going to be hard for you.
It's one of the most popular seasons on the show. It's very popular. People love Celine.
Yeah, okay. Humiliating for England. 978 metres. That's embarrassing.
Matt Heath and Jeremy Wells, the Hodaki Breakfast.
Top five movies in New Zealand.
You ready for me to conquer Ninjago?
Oh,
dating. Dad.
Sorry?
At number five, it's the Lego Ninjago movie, which I'll have to go to. Of course, the Lego Batman movie was bloody good, wasn't it? Bloody good, wasn't it?
Lloyd?
That's right, your son, and it's Lloyd.
No, L-L-O-Y-D. I named you.
You ruined my life.
That's not true. I haven't even been a part of your life. How did I ruin it? I wasn't even there.
Didn't you like the Lego Batman movie?
I didn't mind the Lego Batman movie. This one, looks quite funny.
Apparently not quite as good as the Lego Batman movie, but my boys will love it. You know, it's right up a seven-year-old's alley.
What about this next one? The Emoji movie, are they all over that?
Well, my son Barry was talking, saying he didn't want to go because one of the emojis is the poop emoji.
He doesn't like the poop emoji.
He doesn't approve of the poop
emoji. Why does he not like that one? There'll be some logic behind this. I'm interested to know what it is.
I think it's something to do with that poops don't actually look like that.
Okay.
They don't actually curl up like an ice cream.
Well, they do if you're... It's kind of like a cow pad, isn't it? Well, what is that? Some kind of animal poop.
This, the Emoji movie has been one of the most controversial movies ever made, not because of any dodgy content, just because people just are shaking their head going, what does the world come to when they're making an emoji movie? But it's made a bit of money. And it's number four in New Zealand at the moment.
There's not like any time I've ever been in before. People die or disappear 6 times the national average. And that's just grown-ups. Kids are worse.
It. About Pennywise, the pan-dimensional beast that looks like a clown and has a balloon and is incredibly terrifying. Stephen King's It. Very good reviews. I haven't seen it yet. But I want to. But I'll have to go by myself. I'll get scared.
Yeah, well, don't go by yourself.
Well, who am I going to take?
No, I don't know. Find someone around the office to take.
Grot Lane.
You'd go on a date, wouldn't you?
With Grot Lane?
Yeah.
I'm going to go on a date with Grot Lane. Why not? He's married with 3 kids.
Yeah, but he can still date.
I'm not taking Grot Lane to It.
I'm 81 years of age and have almost 1 billion citizens. I've been in office 62 years, making me...
This is one of those punishing British movies that plays at those nice movie theatres.
Like the Lido.
Yeah.
In Epsom.
Yeah, like the Lido. Victoria and Abdul, about the friendship between Victoria and a guy called Abdul, the unlikely friendship.
It's got Dame Judi Dench in it.
That's always a red flag unless it's a James Bond film.
You don't like Judi Dench?
I don't have anything against her, but it's that kind of sort of quality movie that I find difficult to wrap my head around.
Called drama. You don't like drama.
I got enough drama in my life.
Yeah, you don't like drama, do you? I say I like a drama. Love a drama.
Do you
particular
like a
historical drama. I love it. Yeah, I find it interesting. And I like Judi Dench's mouth. I find myself staring at her mouth a lot.
Do you?
On the big screen, yeah. See, Chris, our executive producer, is nodding away as well.
What do you mean?
Yeah, I just, there's something about the lines in her mouth and the way that she moves her mouth.
Oh, really?
I like it.
Do you?
I'd have a go.
Would you? Mm-hmm. Victoria.
Yeah.
The other Victoria is good. Clara
Oswald. I have a crack at Abdul as well, actually.
The person that's playing Victoria on that other show.
Oh, yeah. Clara. There's nothing wrong with her.
In that other show,
Victoria. Very tidy operator.
Oh, my God.
So you like this number one film, though, don't you?
You know, before you say I don't like historical drama, I do. I love Game of Thrones.
Exactly.
That's an historical drama.
Yeah.
This movie, number one, Kingsman: The Golden Circle. Now, this is more my kind of thing. The first Kingsman was so good. And apparently this one's pretty good too. The Golden Circle, is that about, like, pineapple?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a can of pineapple.
Exactly. Well, I wonder if it has a scene in the last little bit like that last one. With that really weird, indecent proposal.
The indecent proposal from the imprisoned Swedish princess.
We both went, remember we went to that in Christchurch when we were commentating an ACC game during the World Cup. And we all walked down and we said, how was that last bit? That was weird, wasn't it?
It was a bit tonally different from the rest of the film.
It was very strange.
Really up the ante.
Apparently it doesn't exist anymore.
Like people have cut it out.
Cut the scene out.
Have they?
Yeah.
It was weird. It was totally weird. Anyway, those are your top 5 movies in the country. Congratulations, New Zealand. Well done.
Really?
Yeah.
I think they need congratulating for
their top 5.
Well.
Trump Watch.
The greatest president that God ever created.
With Dr. Steve Simpson.
China.
From the Auckland University China. Physics Department.
We will make America great again.
Welcome to the show, Dr. Steve Simpson, Auckland University Physics Department. Great time to have you on because so much happening around the world at the moment and so much of it involves President Donald Trump.
There's a lot going on, Jerry. It's a bit of a debacle. It's snowballing this whole. He's taken on basically sport now. After everything else he's taken on, including, you know, the courts and the Congress and the world and NATO and the media, he's now taken on sport.
Yep.
Well, the strain is quite focused on the African Americans more than just sport generally.
Well, he would say it wasn't, but it's definitely being perceived that way. It all started at a very white rally in Alabama where he's got involved in a primary and he's got a candidate that he wants to win. And he is throwing his base red meat. He went through a lot of his classic hits. He started off with North Korea.
And by the way, Rocket Man should have been handled a long time ago.
His favorite new little nickname there. And we were just discussing that. Look, it's just a problem having two hot-headed buffoons in an international situation. And what's with calling him Rocket Man?
That's paradise.
I thought that's a compliment.
It's a cool nickname.
Yeah, it's
Rocket Man. I wouldn't mind being called Rocket Man.
Neither would I.
Yeah, Rocket Man. Jesus, so Melania Trump's, it's funny, I mean, obviously you're allowed to say about but her bullying campaign's pretty funny, isn't it?
Did you see a big pink jacket she wore? What the heck? Then he went on to talk about his election victory, as he always does.
We had such a great victory. It was just something that was awe-inspiring and something that I think everybody in this room will never, ever forget.
Right. Well, right. Particularly
just
you.
Bring it up again.
Of course, he took his usual shots at the media.
It's always fun to see a red light, like CNN has a red light on, and then I start saying it's fake news, and you see that light go off so fast. If there's an empty seat, they'll show that empty seat. Two people, they got up, they went to the bathroom, they're coming back in five, they show those empty seats every single time.
He's fired up. He's fired up. He loves to get up there, whip up the base. He's the divider in chief.
But the stupid thing with that is over that footage when he said CNN and that same rally won't be showing the crowd, it was exactly when CNN was showing the crowd.
Yeah, every time.
Every time. And he goes, their red light comes on when I say this. It's like, they know they film the whole thing. Like, you're just totally and utterly lying.
It's just making it up.
I guess no one that goes to those rallies will support and watch CNN so they don't see it.
But the biggest controversy he caused was when he started talking about how some of the NFL players have been bending the knee during the national anthem as a protest, originally to
Like Jon Snow did to Khaleesi in Game of Thrones. Potentially, or was asked to. I'll shut up now.
I see what you're saying. There's kind of.
Don't spoil it. I mean,
no, I don't know. It's just a saying from Great.
Don't shoehorn.
It's a saying from Game of Thrones.
It's a different kind of bend the knee.
Is it?
It's a protest. And this is what he said about NFL players.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now? Out. He's fired. He's fired!
Whoa, that was a good move.
That has created carnage, actually. And apparently the protest of players sort of bending down on one knee and basically they're sort of, I guess, protesting the national anthem and saying, well, originally started against police brutality and oppression of black people. But it had dwindled down to about sort of, I think, four protests last weekend. Anyway, there were hundreds and hundreds overnight yesterday in solidarity against Trump, including a lot of the actual NFL team owners who supported Trump. They've all locked arms and they're showing solidarity and they're coming out in droves against Trump, which many people think he's doing on purpose to distract from some of his other issues he's got.
Yeah, he sort of throws that dead cat down, as they say, and everyone looks at that.
He do that on purpose? I don't know.
I don't think he does it on purpose. Nah. He's just throwing so much at the wall. Yeah. I didn't say he did it on purpose.
Yeah, the dead cat idea is an interesting one.
Only Dr. Steve Simpson reckons that he's got some kind of plan.
I don't think he's got a plan.
Just throws such a bunch of crap about that some of it sticks.
No, but if you look at that context when he made those statements, he was definitely trying to whip that audience into a frenzy.
Yeah, exactly. But that's all he's trying to do. It's ego gratification because he knows what he says is going to get a reaction, and he has no concept of the wider situation. It's just what makes him feel good at that time.
I don't know. I think it was also to rev them up and go out and vote for his candidate. And so he knew you watch his face, he knows he's doing something divisive, but he thinks this will help my cause at this moment in time.
Well, Tom Brady, who was a Trump supporter, has come out against it and said, I certainly disagree with the president on this, and locked arms with dudes that were on their knees. So Tom Brady, who's the all-American hero, plays for the Patriots, fantastic player, obviously one of the greatest of all time, but Trump touted his phone call when he got elected.
Yeah, Trump loved him in the campaign.
Yeah, but then Tom Brady said, I didn't phone him. But
hey, look, I think it's a strategic manoeuvre. Going against all the NFL heroes is not great and won't really work with your base, because a lot of his base are also big fans of American football. So
they are, but
good luck with that.
But they're very patriotic as well. I mean, it should play pretty well with...
You reckon?
...with the base.
I don't know.
It depends how much the other players come on board, which seems to be a lot.
Yeah, pretty much all of them.
And also the NBA. LeBron James, Steph Curry, the biggest players in basketball are also speaking out against Trump.
Didn't LeBron James call Trump a bum?
You bum.
You're a bum.
And you bum.
You bum. You're a bum. Hey, thank you so much, Dr. Steve Simpson of the Auckland University Physics Department. We didn't get around to those accusations.
Oh, rats.
It's the Fact Factor.
Fact Factor is a part of the day where I come up with a topic. Matt comes up with three facts on that topic and we judge whether they're good or bad, work out whether he's got the fact factor. Here's the topic. In light of a US college spelunking group accidentally leaving a student behind and locking him in a cave for 3 days where he survived by licking the cave walls. This morning, Matt, I would like spelunking-related facts, please.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready to play the Fact Factor?
Yeah, let's spelunk it up.
Okay. What's your first spelunking fact?
In 1992, a group descended into a French cave with steel brushes to remove graffiti that they found offensive on the walls, but ended up instead partially removing some 15,000-year-old cave paintings.
Oh, that's my goal.
Fact, you Heath, that's fact.
They were still technically graffiti. I mean, these cavemen were just graffitiing the walls the same as anyone else, you know what I mean? Just because they weren't using spray cans, you know, and just drawing pictures of punishing animals, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? I do know exactly what you're saying. Bad start from you, none from one. What's your second spelunking fact?
My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius, commander of the armies of the North, general of the Felix Legions. Loyal servant to the true emperor, Marcus Aurelius. Father to a murdered son. Husband to a murdered wife. And I will have my vengeance. In this life or the next.
At Russell Crowe's request, musician Nick Cave wrote a script for a sequel to the Gladiator movie. In it, Maximus fights Roman gods in the afterlife, is reincarnated, defends early Christians, and ultimately lives forever. Eventually, he leads tanks in the Second World War and even works in the modern-day Pentagon. Russell was not happy, and it was scrapped.
What?
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
What a fact! That has the fact factor.
Nick Cave wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
So he fought Roman gods. Correct me if I'm wrong. He got reincarnated. You said something about defending early Christians, and then he lived forever. And then he leads tanks in the Second World War.
Actually, sounds like quite a good sequel to Gladiator.
You would be into that.
Yeah. Well, Nick Cave, he's a great writer. He's written some pretty bloody good books in his time. Well, two, you know. And he's written a good script, movie script.
That one got scrapped.
Yeah, well, they should have bloody made it. Sounds bloody good. I'd like to see Maximus Aurelius in his skirt and his bloody sword and sandals driving a tank. That would have been bloody good.
Some panzer doing a pincer movement somewhere in the African desert. Awesome. All right, what's your third and final spelunking fact?
During the summer months in the Australian town of Coober Pedy, half the population move underground and live in caves they have carved out of the rock to stay out of the 40-plus degree heat.
What was that Australian town's name again?
Coober Pedy.
Yeah, I don't like the sound of it.
Fact, you Heath. That's fact.
Coober Pedy. What sort of name is that for a town?
What are the votes so far?
You lost the fake papers.
Yeah. Well, hang on a minute. Have I?
You lost it.
All three. Voted all three down.
Basically. Is that it? Is that the end of the show?
That's the end of
the
show.
End of the podcast?
That's it. Done.
That was it?
That was it.
Absolute wonder of a podcast. Why did you even waste your time listening
to
that?
It was good.
No,
I thought
rubbish.
That was good.
Those are the best bits. And it was that rubbish.
No, they were good bits. It's
rubbish.
There were better bits that we left in the show.
Why did we do that then?
Because we were in a hurry.
Okay.
And some of the bits were so good that they went loud on the internet.
We should put more effort into this.